Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Grenevelt, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Peter Lafter. For over a decade, Peter's been studying innovative organizations, experimenting with new leadership approaches, and working within communities to help leaders navigate an increasingly disruptive world. He's found that to thrive in today's environment, we must move beyond outdated command and control structures. Peter believes we need dynamic, human-centered leadership where authority is distributed, creativity is unlocked, and connection drives success. From his early career in staffing and recruitment to his discovery of distributed leadership, Peter shares how trading control for abundance can unlock creativity, innovation, and meaning in the workplace. Together, Peter and Dane dive into real-world examples from healthcare to manufacturing that show how shifting power closer to the front lines can transform teams, leaders, and entire industries. If you've ever wondered what leadership looks like in a world where agency, co-creation, and trust matter more than hierarchy, this conversation will spark fresh ideas about the future of work and the future of teams. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Grunewald, and today I'm joined by Peter Lafter. Peter has some cool titles to his name. Keynote speaker, storyteller, entrepreneur from the staffing and recruitment industry. So there's a lot that we've been touching on that we share in common from an experience standpoint. But I'm really excited to hear more of what Peter's seeing today as we kind of dive into distributed leadership and, you know, models that are going to drive teamwork in the future. So thanks for joining and welcome to the show, Peter.
I'm really excited to be here. As we were saying earlier, I think the title of this podcast really appeals to me because I think the future is teamwork. And I think we're in for a major shift in how humans interact with each other. And I'm pretty excited by it.
So. You've actually got me captivated now. Maybe we've got to change it to the future is teamwork. We'll get there. Well, tell me a little bit more about you. Like, how did you come to be doing all this cool work?
So I, as you mentioned, I was an entrepreneur in the recruiting and staffing industry. And yeah, I was raised in a very do-gooder, you know, save the world type of environment. And I never expected to go into business. It would really just happen by accident. And I was never into sports as a kid. So I never knew that I'm insanely competitive. And so when I discovered entrepreneurs and sales, this unmet need that I had all my life and I didn't even know and just loved it. And I realized early on that I was making more of a difference as an entrepreneur as I was working in social work when I fell into it. And I was finding people work. And I remember Christine Smith, if you're out there, yeah, we're still friends today, but yeah, I remember placing Christine and I was on a night project as a legal word processor in the early 90s. And she said, "Peter, I just want to thank you. I am able to pursue my dream of being an actor and I can pay my rent thanks to you. And I couldn't do it without you." And I realized, like, I had been working as a social worker for a year and I hadn't had anywhere close to making that kind of contribution in someone's life. And then on the sales side, it was the same thing. People who were really struggling were feeling them, but they were also, people were really struggling and I could help them, but they didn't want to talk to me. So it was this great challenge that I just loved. Like, how do I solve this? And I left in 95 and it was a family business that was about to close. We had about 94 sales, was $500,000, and it was just my mom and a receptionist. And by 2001, we were at 12 million, or 2000, we were at 12 million.
Awesome.
And we just had huge growth. And but recruiting is broken. And yeah, the making the world a better place, as staffing became horribly commoditized and frankly extractive, I was not happy about myself. And in 2017, my daughter said, hey, Dad, I'm working really hard to prepare for a future that I don't think is going to exist by the time I get there. And that just sent me into a tailspin. I really could not continue working to maintain a standard of living when, I didn't disagree with my daughter. And, if she was heading toward this really frightening future, I should be doing something about it. That is, after all, my main responsibility as a father, is to ensure that, she's got a safe and happy life to lead. Yeah. And I started experimenting on how to change my staffing business, which I was not able to do in a way that I felt would really make a contribution. In 2020, I had an investor who's awesome, but we saw the business differently. And I think COVID was really freaking him out. And I said, buy my shares. Yeah. And he did. It was not a giant exit. Yeah. It gave me the credibility saying I sold my company, and I try and avoid any other questions after that. During that time, I've had several transformative experiences that introduced me to the concept of distributed leadership. And I started to see how command and control had so negatively impacted my experience as a leader, but more importantly, cut me off from all of the good stuff, all of the insights, innovation, creativity of the people around me. And the sense of absolute fear of not having the right answer or not knowing which way to go. And this mistaken idea that I needed to be the smartest person in the room, which is really never the case for any room I walk into. But the stress of those two ideas was no way to live. And then when you can tap into the insights, creativity, and brilliance of your team, it's a joy. I mean, walking into a room with an intractable problem to solve and that I have no idea how to solve it, but the absolute confidence that the answer was somewhere in the room. And my job was just to make sure that people felt comfortable and safe in speaking their mind and had the relationships with each other, they could sharpen ideas and solve these problems. Yeah. And they did. Yeah, they did. And frequently what I learned was when that didn't work, it was because I was inserting myself in a way that wasn't appropriate. And now what I'm really committed to is I'm convinced that this age of disruption that humanity has entered, which is so exciting and wonderful in so many ways, but the version of leadership that we've been practicing for the past 2,000 years is wholly incompatible with this time that we've entered. And I think we're going to see probably the greatest upheaval in the Fortune 500 that we've ever seen over the next 4 to 8 years. And I think we're going to start to see a new type of company emerge from that. That is really focused on distributing power and authority throughout the organization and having decisions made closer to the front lines, and a very, very different version of leadership than one that we're experiencing, and one in which where team dynamics is everything.
I love that. I'm so aligned with the story, the genesis of kind of that intrigue and curiosity, particularly around your daughter as well, because that's a big reason that I'm driven now. I've now got four kids and I'm sitting there going, I want them to be part of a workplace that's energizing and is strong and builds on their community.
It was when the millennials came in and we started to see this shift. It was like, just because you went through hell early in your career does not mean I need to.
Yeah.
And I think that folks like you and I are now saying, just because we went through hell doesn't mean that anybody else should go through it.
Anybody. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I agree 100%. That's a lot of the work that I've been doing professionally and personally lately. And I love this this line that you had on your LinkedIn profile, which was trading control for abundance. You described it briefly, being able to walk into a room and be able to bring out the insights, creativity, brilliance of a team. But the abundance factor is it's maybe a word that's overused, but it's so real. Like, I see small examples of it every day when people create the right conversations.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I look ahead at the next 5 to 10 years, I see so much possibility. Yeah, and I think that we are entering in an age of abundance. But I also think it could go either way. We could be entering an age of techno-fascism, where we're all, you know, being controlled by, you know, billionaires and their, you know, and their systems. And that, I think that would suck for everybody, especially the billionaires. Yeah, and so my charge now is to do everything I possibly can to make sure we're on the other side of that razor's edge.
That's super and, cool.
And I think capitalism is the way to do it.
Yeah.
And the evidence for me is abundantly clear that command and control has been failing for a long time. It is horribly inefficient. And as distributed leadership organizations are emerging, I think they're going to kick the pants off of those old command and control companies.
When you say a distributed leadership organization, Peter, is there a framework for that, or is that more a philosophical position?
Yes. So I think, it has happened in, there's been emergence of organizations. And the first one that I've heard of was actually a coal mine in the 40s and 50s in England that, mm-hmm. just stopped working with managers. And they were just like, we're just going to do this on our own. And they were phenomenally more productive than anybody else out there. And so it has emerged in a few different places. There's a company, and there's several companies that do. There's a home health aid company called Burzog. Please, Dutch speakers, forgive me for the horrible mispronunciation. But they were started in 2012. A guy named Jos de Blok, who was a home health aid nurse, and he was just tired of constantly being monitored and giving specific time limits on his tasks and a standard of care that often flew in the face of what his customers, his patients needed. Yeah. And so in 2012, he and his three of his colleagues formed Burzog, and which means neighborhood care. And they put together teams of about 12 nurses that took a portfolio of 60 clients and gave them very little mandates on what they were supposed to do other than some specific cultural or philosophical directions.
Yeah.
Focus on independence, focus on neighborhood care, focus on relationships. And I mean, Burzog produced ridiculously amazing results. So about 12 years after they were founded, they had an 80% market share in a highly regulated market. And that alone is just amazing.
Yeah.
But their patients were spending 40% less for their care. And they spent 50% less time under care. And Burzog's overhead was about 8%. Where their competitors were 30%.
Yeah.
So you have less middle management,
Brilliant.
Less control from time, much greater results, guided by a group of committed people who are close to the ground, making decisions as they are, as they need to, that is appropriate for what they're doing, within guidance of a particular set of ideas. And there has been several other instances. The Morningstar company produces the largest tomato producer in the United States. They produce 40% of the U.S. tomato market. No managers, no leaders, not one person in the organization can decide to hire or fire another individual. They're a privately held company. We're started one owner, almost $1 billion in sales every year. They've had double-digit growth in both top and bottom line revenue in an industry that's standardized 1% growth. I mean, it's just remarkable.
Phenomenal. And when you say that not one person can hire or fire, do they do that through a committee or a process, or is there like a manager once removed, manager twice removed? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So none of the managers, so each teams work together to make decisions. So their teams will decide on what the output of members are and, together. And then they work with dependent teams to make agreements about what expectations and standard operating procedures that they can they can give. So, and I think that is, so I believe that the concept of leadership in a command and control environment is completely dead. But, if you look at what I call an abundant leader, right?
Yeah.
You know, these are the people who allow others to lead. They help create frameworks to allow for decision making, you know, that is independent of management. They create frameworks for dealing with conflict, for for all of these things, and they are not mandating those frameworks, but they are co-creating those frameworks with the teams that they're working with. And so I think, when I talk about distributed leadership, that's a big question that people ask me, what's the structure? What does it look like? I think, if we look at command and control organization, there's a CEO on top, and then there's a C-suite, and then there's silos moving down. It's pretty standard. In a company like Birdsog, it could be completely different and more like a hub and spoke model where all the power is happening on the end of, the spokes. Or, Morningstar, it looks like a constellation. I even think it looks like a digestive tract that follows their business process. Or it could look like a command and control organization. And that was the insight I had. If you look at the American general, Stanley McChrystal, who wrote the book Team of Teams, what he understood was the need was, it wasn't about the structure. It was how you apply abundant leadership. So McChrystal created connections between silos. He allowed for decision-making with those who had the most information, really, really pushed this broad concept of commander's intent, right? The commander doesn't tell you how to do it. They just says what you want, what they want, what the result that they're looking for. And as you go down, people just figure that out on their own. But so McChrystal's genius was making those connections of really, really, really pushing all authority possible to those point of connections to the ground.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is what people lack when they are looking at new models of organizational structure that allow for power and authority to be distributed. They're looking to borrow a model. And Zappos ran into this. They deployed something called Holacracy. And it was an abject failure.
Yes.
It was an abject failure. Now, Holacracy was created for a small software company, and with a very, very specific culture. But what worked about it was they created it, right?
Yes.
And Birdsog, they created their operational structure. Morningstar, they created their operational structure. There is no one operational structure that's going to work for every organization. You need, everyone has a different culture, client base, regulatory environment. The Army, having no hierarchical structure is insane. It would never work.
Too much at stake.
But it doesn't mean it can't be distributed, right? There is, and if you look at, Russia and Ukraine, very, very top down. They innovate very slowly. Ukraine, highly innovative. Except those innovations don't necessarily travel across silos, right? So both, systems have their merits. But it's really, how is it, what is it that you want to accomplish, and what can your organization afford, and how do you create it internally and start small?
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. And I love the fact that it doesn't have to follow a set structure, that it is co-created. And this distributing authority down to where the work's being done is something that's, I think, captivated my attention for quite some time, because it drives a lot of mattering and purpose at the individual level, which I think is powerful, going back to your earlier points on getting the best out of people, whether it's their discretionary effort, their imagination, their ideas, their feedback. I think that's a clear benefit of this distributed leadership approach.
Well, it is. There's a million examples of huge blunders. I don't know if you know the story of the Chevy Nova and its Latin American rollout.
No.
The Chevy Nova was a muscle car, and Chevy thought, oh, this is, they're going to love it in Latin America. And so they rolled it out in Latin America, and no one bought it. Like, it was just a complete disaster. And they couldn't figure out why. Well, Nova in Spanish means no va, the verb to go. So they put out a car that was named Doesn't Go. And now, you want to tell me that there wasn't someone lower on that team who spoke Spanish, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars was wasted in that stupid mistake that could have been like, let's just call it someone else, something else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But that, you know, in a command and control structure, information flows down. It does not flow up, right? Yeah. So what leaders hear is softened, sanitized, you know, scrub clean.
Yeah.
And so they're at the top of the pyramid. They think that they can see everything and control everything as a result, but they're actually seeing fog. Yeah. And they're mistaking the fog for reality. And I think if we look at the results of corporate America, 70% of large-scale corporate initiatives end in failure. 78% of all employees globally are disengaged. Yeah, yeah. And then on top of that, something like 72% of senior leaders report being stressed out, with a third of that number saying the stress is extreme. Yeah, they have too much to do because they are doing something that is impossible. And the reason why employees are checked out is because they want meaning and agency. They want to know that their work makes a difference and that they have some say in doing it. So, you know, employees want more agency.
Yeah.
And leaders are stressed because they're trying to control so much.
Like, isn't that fascinating?
To me, the answer is very obvious. Yeah.
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 It is fascinating. I have seen through COVID and now this kind of AI bloom that we're seeing, that some teams are being given a lot more meaning and agency because they're getting to pick their tools and the way that they work. And I was talking to a friend, Michael McCarroll, over at Team Radri the other day, and he said, since COVID and AI, they've seen two interesting phenomena. One, intact teams are actually seeing increased engagement levels and confidence. Collective confidence. However, teams of teams, you're seeing more tension across silos. So if that's happening in all of these businesses, then this distributed leadership concept is also a way to solve for that, because you can leave the intact team growing, but maybe you can build and co-create some systems and approaches to deal with the inter-team.
How do teams work together? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if, I don't know if you follow the Arbinger Institute. I think probably one of the best business books I've, two best business books I've ever read is Leadership and Self-Deception. But then they have this book, the Inside Out, Leadership. It's not Inside Out. I'm forgetting the name, but their whole focus is, how is it that you create teams that are hyper aware of what the needs of their constituents are and are making decisions not based on what they need, but based on what their constituents' needs are. So, I mean, there are frameworks for all of this. Like, it's just, but I think the command and control is so present that it's all we know. And, you know, what I get a lot is like, don't people need to be told what to do? And sure, we've set up conditions. I mean, the command and control, remember why we created this. Yeah, it was sovereigns were the only ones who had access to information, period, right? Yeah. And they had to make sure that an illiterate group of peasantry didn't plant the wrong crops, you know, so everyone starved, right?
Yeah.
Very, very necessary. But we've carried that over where we all have this magical device in our pocket that connects us to the entire compendium of human knowledge.
Yes. So you don't need that control now to save for the catastrophic. I guess in a highly, let's say a hazardous work environment where you're dealing with high pressure vessels or explosive content, you're going to need to have certain controls that are very firm. How do they play out in that distributed leadership model?
So this is an interesting question. So I went to a Quaker school called Earlham College. And we had a very, very strong community code. And one of that was, you don't cheat. And in honor of that code, professors would walk out of the classroom when they were giving an exam.
Wow.
Now, they felt comfortable doing that because if I brought out my book, I promise you, the three people around me, it would be over. They'd be like, what the hell are you doing? You can't do that. You're violating the community code. So I don't know about you, but if I'm working in a dangerous environment, you know, I do not want to die, right? So I am fine following guidelines, right? But it is like how do guidelines play out? So I'll give you a perfect example. The Michigan Health and Hospital Corporation was having horrible problems with infections, and particularly reinfection, people post-surgical infections. Mm-hmm. And they had the worst rate in the country. People were dying and it was very expensive. And they implemented a 4 or 5 point checklist to solve it. For number one on the checklist was wash your hands. And use clean, dressing. It was just all simple stuff, like nothing there. But the key was, is they allowed nurses to enforce the checklist. So you had nurses hip checking doctors out of the way because they didn't see them wash their hands. Right. And so this subtle change of how power and authority is distributed. So in a command and control organization, if I press this button or spill that liquid, everybody dies, right? I might need to be told to do that. But if I'm part of a team that knows that, and that team knows that I'm not doing well, they're going to be watching me very, very differently, right?
Yes.
And I'm going to be watching them when I'm capable. And I think that's, that's the thing about distributed leadership. We think, I'm a leader. I'm good at this forever. No, I get into a fight with my wife, and I walk in right after that. I am a crappy leader. There's no way I'm a good leader when I am that distracted. So, these things, but leadership is effervescent. It's all around us, right? You've seen this from your children, right? There are times where your children have provided leadership to you, right?
Oh, 100%.
And if we're paying attention, we can follow that leadership and really see that. And, but if we think that control is fixed and static, it's not. But if we think that, on our bad days when we're shitty leaders, we are going to insist that we are the leader.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And they're very good examples too, Peter. It makes me think of some of the better safety programs that I've seen run in the oil and gas industry, for example, where they do create that authority for everyone to stop work. If the standard you walk by is the standard you accept kind of mentality. So it's not to say that distributed leadership is kind of all open and philosopher driven.
Everybody does what they want.
Be guidelines, there can be procedures, but you're allowing people to know how they operate in and around those.
Or in a high compliance organization, if I'm running a nuclear power plant, there's going to be a lot of structure, right? And we're not going to be able to create that structure. The local government's going to create that structure. It's going to be imposed on us. But how we interact with it, how we implement it, that's a different story.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So when you think, going back to McChrystal, teams of teams, the military has always intrigued me because in the military, you're not always at war. So you've got lots of time to do training, to brief, to debrief, to go off to a specialist school, where in a lot of our workplaces, going back to your point earlier, like 70% of people are overworked, overwhelmed, everyone's just grinding. Do you see or do you believe that there are going to be important moments, important spaces that we need to create so that we can do that co-creation work?
I think where we make space for that. So yes, I think there's going to be a real bifurcation. So I talk about something that I call about the Deming effect, Deming, total quality management. So, he was shilling total quality management to American manufacturers who did not listen, did not care. Everyone was buying their low quality products. No one had a choice. So they were just like, go stuff it, but Deming. Yeah. And then, General MacArthur brought him to Japan and the Japanese ate up his stuff. And then they used those methodologies and combined them with their own. And they came back and they beat the crap out of the American manufacturers. And those American manufacturers went back to Deming. Like, hey, Edwards, could you show us that thing you were talking about a couple years ago? So the Deming effect is when market forces force market change. And look at where we are. So one, we have this revolution of technology that is time saving, energy saving, mind saving, and AI is just is at, we're at the tip of the iceberg of AI, and AI is the tip of the iceberg. There's so many other technologies coming our way. So it is creating this world of complexity, of excitement, of opportunity, you know, that the small group at the top of the pyramid, you know, of command and control, they don't understand it. They can't possibly understand it. They can't possibly see it. And so I think this change that we are in will force this shift. And so I think it'll come from a few places. There's going to be one, mass layoffs in the next couple of years. But we're not going to lay off. Yeah, we're going to lay off really smart people. Yeah. And what's different about AI, it's not like the locomotive or the electric light that happens to us and we just can buy it and use it. No, this is a tool that allows anyone to create.
Yes.
And you know, so these people are laid off. They're going to start forming companies. Yeah, and they're going to be, you know, they're going to form companies in very, very different ways using very, very different technology. So you're going to see for these giants who are letting go of people, they will be creating their own competition. But it'll be competition that is building systems that is more efficient. They'll have work styles that are more efficient. And they'll be able to be much more nimble in how they adopt new technology and make changes that are appropriate for customers. So, I think that dynamic, you'll start to see those command and control companies either going away or rapidly trying to figure it out. And for those trying to figure out, that will be the difficult part. Because in my experience, and this is, you know, I had my conversion to distributed leadership around 2012, 13. And here I am thinking, I am this adaptive leader. And then in 2019, I ran into a huge problem that was wholly caused by my distrust of my India team. And it was an expensive problem. It cost, you know, definitely well into the six figures. It was very painful, and it was all my fault. It was all because, oh, this group of people need to be monitored. They did not. It made sense to me at the time. And since then, in working in organizations, you know, consultancies that taught distributed leadership or, you know, organizations that promoted it, I've run into leaders of those organizations who think that they are adaptive, but they're not. And so I think, yeah, you know, that's going to take. And so what I realized is distributed leadership is something we need. This new form of leadership, this abundant leadership that I talk about as the path to distributed leadership, you need to experience it first.
Yeah.
And so those command and control leaders are going to have to start working in a very different way in order to start to bring on those experiences so that they are ready when this shift is really upon us. And it's happening fast.
That's fascinating. There's a couple of things that you've touched on there that align heavily with my hopes for the future. One is we see this this bloom of entrepreneurship and small teams that are creating in communities better businesses, healthy teams. I think that's exciting. I think it holds true to where I've seen great teams emerge and sustain energy and innovation in the past. And that's very cool. And the second piece is that the big guys that are committed to and willing to make the change are going to, going back to my question on making space, they're going to have to make space. They're going to have to send leaders off because you're never going to experience abundant leadership in your job of today where you're overworked. So whether you're going away to a 6-week course or you're being sent away to run a new business unit for 6 months and come back and share learnings, I think there's going to be some very interesting pathways that the big business is going to have to consider.
And I also want to just touch base on this overwork question, right? Because, you know, are we really overworked or are we poorly managed? And, you know, the number that I keep looking at is 70% of all corporate initiatives end in failure. I mean, this is going to cost several $1 trillion this year alone, right? So what percentage of your average corporate middle manager is rushing to complete projects that will never be completed, that will never work, because of this sense-making process? What is it that we need? This idea that, oh, you know, I, in 2000 and 25 can know what it is that we are going to need in 2027 when I don't know what's going to happen in 6 months. The arrogance of that statement to set in motion billions of dollars of plans into that air where thousands of people are frantically working to something that will never happen. Yeah. So I honestly don't know. Yeah, I've been an entrepreneur in my life. I've serviced large companies. I've never worked in them. Yeah, but I've talked to a lot of people who have, and it seems like there is, if 78% of people are doing the bare minimum, to get by. Yeah, and so, is it a question of that we're overworked and we don't have enough time? Or is a question that we're just going about it the wrong way? And I think the more I look into it, the more I'm starting to lean toward we're just doing it wrong.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think that's the root cause that we're doing it wrong. But I think they're both sides of the same coin. Because by doing it wrong, you create a lot of processes that cause people to be stuck. And while they might be able to coast or not be doing a lot of productive work, they can't drive the change they want to see in the organization or they believe is necessary because of the poor decision-making and structures.
We can't boil the ocean. And I think that's the thing that we have to understand, particularly for a large change like this.
Yeah.
Have to start very, very small. Teams. I am working on this, what I'm calling, 3D leadership model, but it is how teams and leaders can start to make this transition of understanding because you need to experience it. Yeah. So, when you're faced with a problem or a project, taking a page from Dave Snowden's work of his Kinevin framework, start with sense making, right? Get a sense of, gather data, gather perceptions. What are you seeing? What do you think that means? How might that be impactful? What's important for that? Cross-functional horizon scans, using reflection loops. It's important that leaders shift from roles to perspective, right? And then, from there, really looking to define, the second D, aligning people, with their experience and their understanding with the problem. So if we look at, we have these emergent technologies coming, AI, there's robotics, quantum computing, blockchain, 3D printing, nanotechnology, there's so many of them, right? And so they're emerging, but they're also, they're recombining. So AI combining with robotics, right? Yeah. We haven't seen it yet. It will change the world in ways that we can't imagine. What happens? I don't know how it will change the world, but someone in my orbit will have a little bit more of a sense. So really bringing teams together based on who has the most perspective in this area, and then really looking at, there's a framework called strategic doing.
Yes.
And using that framework is fairly brilliant. Looking at what assets this particular team has, that they're willing to contribute. How can we combine those assets to magnify their impact? And with those recombined assets, ask the question, what can we do? What should we do? And what will we do to move us closer to our goal? And then break off into asynchronous teams during a sprint cycle and have those teams run based on what is needed for the leadership of the team and who excels in those areas, allowing for emergent leadership. And if you're creating structures like this that are iterative and they're passing leadership back and forth, the senior leaders will take notice. They will say, "Oh, that moved faster than I expected. I didn't even realize that was an issue." And what they will start to realize is, "I don't know everything that I need to know in order to get through this mess." And that is where we need to be. It's like, doctors are trained to act as if they know everything, and they don't. And that is the problem. And I think it's the same thing with leaders. When leaders can let go of being the ones to have the answers and rather facilitating the answer emerging.
Yeah,
that's where we need to be.
Yeah, and I've said this before, and I feel the energy lifting up just through this conversation, Peter, that I think a lot of leaders need to hear that. They want to hear that. They're not choosing to be where they are.
Well, and that's the thing that I found was so fascinating is the degree to which I was suffering. You know, this idea, you know, that I was the leader, that I was needed to be the smartest person in the room, which is so laughable to me. You know, and then and I needed to have the answer. And it really happened. This woman who worked for me, Becky, we had a really big problem and I had a really dumb solution, and it was expensive and painful to implement. And she had a really simple solution that I didn't believe would work. And she got in my face and she said, "Peter, what you're suggesting is a violation of our core values." And I was like, "Well, crap, I can't argue with that." You know, like I set up this whole thing. Yeah. So, okay, do your thing, but it's going to fail. And when it fails, I'll just swoop in and do it my expensive, stupid way, and cause a lot of pain and suffering. And it just worked like a charm. It was boom, problem solved, easy. Everyone was happy. You know, it was cheap. It improved the lives of my recruiting team who were suffering under the policies that caused this problem. Yeah. But for me, it was like, oh, this idea that I need to be smarter than I am, that I have to have all the answers, that I have to sit up at night, you know, trying to figure out all the problems and come in and make a big speech about it. Oh my God, who wants to hear that? Who wants to do that? And that's what I realized. It just, life became so much easier. It was so much fun. I could relate to people in a different way. I could see how brilliant they were, right? Yeah. And rely on their brilliance. I was a horrible boss. I was really bad at that old model. Yeah. And it wasn't until, you know, I fully stepped into where, like, my last company, I still talk to my employees. You know, I haven't been part of that company for 5 years. I never would have imagined that before. It never would have been possible for me before.
That's brilliant. Yeah. I love the story of Becky too, and the fact that she was able to use core values as kind of the authority to bring in that moment.
She has no idea what a massive contribution she's made to me. I was such a horrible boss that she did not like me that much. And I do not blame her at all. Becky, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I still, whenever she does something I liked it, congratulations. But I'm so grateful for that. Yeah, her courage. Yeah, because, I mean, I don't think I'm that scary, but, you know.
It's a function of leadership in any organization. Yeah.
And so bless you, Becky. Thank you.
What it leads me to as far as a final question, because we've been flying through this, is if you're a leader out there that's listening and you're interested in distributed leadership, you know, you mentioned it, you can't boil the ocean. You can't take a company from A to B overnight. But is there sort of one tip or one mindset that you could bring to work tomorrow or next week that might help you go and find that Becky opportunity?
Yeah. So this is a really tough one, because we really have to understand what happens when we're in conflict, right? Because most of us view conflict as combat, right? You disagree with me and I need to kill you. You know, is how we so I think the first step is, what are the triggers? What are the sensations that you start to feel when you are entering, and when someone's questioning you, when you're entering conflict, when you're getting pissed off? And that is an invitation to dive into curiosity. When you can recognize those moments, when you can recognize those moments and get curious, and ask questions, how do you think we should handle it? I think, the book, Turn the Ship Around, I'm forgetting, he had a framework, that he had for people who were raising problems and questions, to the point where he didn't need to do it. And I think that those, creating those frameworks for yourself, for how is it that you can really understand what's happening, is the best place to start. So.
No, that's neat, Peter. Well, this has been high octane. I love the fact that we started from recruiting is broken, and what we might need for our children to have futures that are exciting. But then we kind of moved into this whole retrospective introspection on what we are as leaders, what leaders we've experienced. And what I find fascinating about abundance over control, this abundant leader concept, is it's energizing for teams. It's going to create new solutions that we need in our communities. I thought the Bertzog example in Holland was brilliant. Like, there aren't many people out there right now that don't have reason to be concerned about their healthcare or the healthcare of their aging siblings or parents right now. It's tough. And I think that this construct around giving ourselves a break as leaders and going in and doing more co-creation is just so accessible. So I really appreciate the way you've shone a light, a spotlight on all of that really cool content.
That is my life's work. And if I can help ease this transition into what's next, I can die a happy man. Yeah.
That's brilliant, Peter. And if anyone out there is interested in bringing you in as a keynote speaker or finding more of your work, how do they reach out, make contact?
My website, peterlafter.com. And there's not a lot of Peter Lafters, so I'm easy to find on LinkedIn. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Peter. It's been
really
a joy.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,